Summer break is here. I want my kids to have fun, but I also want them to keep their skills sharp. Between vacations and sports, I need something that fits our busy schedule without adding stress. That's why we use IXL. IXL is an award-winning online platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's proven to improve grades, and one subscription covers every child in the home, saving us time and money. It's trusted nationwide. And in fact, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now, and listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
This summer, I'm taking a new approach to styling the smallest spaces in my house with help from Bob's Discount Furniture. Bob's has the small space solutions that America's waited 250 years for, like retro chic bedroom sets with plenty of storage, dinner party ready dining sets in four fun colors, stylish, spacious, bobopedic sofas, and feature-packed power recliners that let me kick back in even the smallest rooms. Plus, I know that Bob's styles are backed by thousands of real five-star customer reviews, so I can trust that the furniture that I'm getting is not just affordable, but built to last. And the best part? Bob's furniture ships fast, so I can enjoy my new styles all summer long. So when you're ready to ditch the furniture you're not excited about for the latest trends in small space styling, stop in or shop online at Bob's Discount Furniture, where America shops for furniture.
From KYW News Radio 103.9 FM, this is Bridging Philly, connecting our communities on the issues that matter to you. Presented by Gift of Life Donor Program. Register as an organ donor at donorsone.org.
Hello, I'm Raquel Williams. Welcome to Bridging Philly. In a nation today that sometimes can feel very divided, there's a program that helps adults guide children to embrace the differences in everyone. The mission of the Anti-Racism Academy is to dismantle racism and promote social justice through educational trainings, videos, and workshops. I sit down with Brandy Blocker Anderson, who is the founder of the Anti-Racism Academy and its Teach Me Anti-Racism Allyship series.
We have to be intentional about what our kids are consuming.
And Charity Howard catches up with the one and only Philadelphia Freeway.
Free Fest is going to be amazing. It's going to be one for the history books.
All that's coming up on Bridging Philly.
Bridging Philly producer Sabrina Boyd Circa came across something called the Anti-Racism Academy, and their goal is to dismantle racism and promote social justice through educational videos, training, and workshops for aspiring anti-racist parents, teachers, kids, and organizations. Their vision is to raise the next generation of anti-racist leaders and dismantle racism one lesson at a time. Now, we thought this was fascinating, especially when we explored the educational tools that actually allow teachers, parents, and kids to explore ways to become allies of all humans and accept everyone for who they are, even if, no, especially if, they are different from them, whether it's how they worship, love, look, dress, identify, their abilities or disabilities. Joining me today is Brandy Blocker Anderson, founder and CEO of the Anti-Racism Academy and creator of Teach Me Anti-Racism Allyship series. Welcome to Bridging Philly, Brandy.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Before we get into the series, I want to talk about your background because I want to know who Brandy is and how this all came about and how you founded the Anti-Racism Academy. What were you doing before this?
Wow. Well, again, thank you so much. I want to make sure I tell the abridged version because I always tell folks I'm in my fourth career now as an entrepreneur. So North Philly girl, born and raised, went to Girard College for middle and high school. I went to six different public schools before the sixth grade, before going to Girard College. So long story short, through Girard, I was able to do various programs, ended up at Yale for undergrad, came back to Philly, was a teacher at University of Pennsylvania, or I got my master's degree while I was teaching, and then went on to law school. But really, what I'm doing now is a culmination of my life's work, Personally, professionally, academically, most recently, I served as the Chief Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Officer for the City of Philadelphia. Before that, I worked for the Biden-Harris administration as a senior advisor for DEI at the U.S. Department of Commerce, working for the Minority Business Development Agency. Whole lot of words. But really, what it comes down to is, for me, as someone who has seen in real time what structural racism, what different forms of oppression can mean for individuals as well as neighborhoods and institutions, it is so important to me to bring a lot of this work out of the ivory tower and make it accessible for everyone, from the youngest among us to those of us who are sitting in, you know, government halls and C-suites and the like.
Mm-hmm. What exactly inspired you to start the Anti-Racism Academy? And what is the Anti-Racism Academy?
Yes, yes. So set the scene for you. It is June 2020, and we're all locked up in our homes. It's the pandemic. And at the time, I was working as in-house counsel at Comcast. And so, you know, my work in DEI started a long time ago, back in high school, but it was always sort of something else I did in addition to my day job, if you will. But I decided at the time that, just given everything that was going on in the world, I'm sure we all saw that horrible, horrible video of George Floyd being murdered by the police. And I realized that I could be doing a lot more with the gifts and the blessings that God has given me and the opportunities I've had to go from, you know, I mean, the first school I went to was in Kensington, and I spent, you know, a lot of my early childhood there, mm-hmm. to, you know, being able to be at these Ivy League institutions and seeing just the wide gap and studying it. And hearing so many people say, I just don't understand how this happened. I wish, you know, we could just understand. And it was a moment for the country. And I don't think the moment has passed. And I'm sure we'll get into that later. But it started as a passion project, started making YouTube videos just to be able to answer some of those, you know, awkward questions a lot of us found ourselves getting from our white coworkers. Mm. And even a lot of the questions that we had. So not everyone had the opportunity to go and study race and gender and sexuality and all the things that I got to, you know, use my education to study. But, you know, we all deserve access to the information so that we can make a more liberatory world. Mm-hmm. So what started as a passion project, just making YouTube videos, how to talk to your kids about race, you know, just getting people to look at the media they were consuming in a more critical way, mm-hmm. grew into doing training. So I started working in schools, working with teachers, and students, and just have these preliminary conversations. One big idea that, you know, I think it was important to really underline is that, you know, we can't get around it. We can't say, oh, kids are too young, or let's not talk about it. Right. Because in the absence of us as the adults having those responsible conversations with kids, they're still picking up these messages. They're still learning bias. You know, there's all kinds of studies out there that show by the time the kid is like 2-3 years old, they've already internalized a lot of, in particular, anti-Black bias. And a lot of us can remember back to learning about the doll test.
The dolls, yep.
Exactly. And those were preschool children who had already internalized the idea that black skin was ugly and bad and all of these things. And it carries with us. And so, you know, as much as I think it's important to do the work as adults, I, you know, would love to see a world where the kids could start to get that information earlier so that we're not sitting in a, you know, awkward training at work, you know, trying to figure it out. So that was a lot of the impetus. And so the Anti-Racism Academy is a production company of sorts, you know, with our media content or our video content, as well as a publisher. So since starting the company, I published 7 children's books under the Teach Me Anti-Racism banner, including the one upon which the Teach Me Anti-Racism Allyship was based. So it started off as just, you know, books, rhyming books, again, just trying to take these big ideas, complex ideas, and make them accessible, make it bite-sized. So short videos, recognizing that we're in the new age of TikTok and, you know, media, all these things that kids are consuming. So I wanted to make sure that, you know, we could be accessible to many generations.
Before we talk about, you know, teaching the kids anti-racism and the Anti-Racism Academy Allyship series, you do offer training for businesses and corporations, essentially DEI services, and you were doing it for the city. What does that entail today, and why would a company need this type of training?
Absolutely. So oftentimes the clients I serve, they come to me either because they already have a history or practice of doing this work and they want to, you know, continue recognizing that, you know, it's not a one-off thing where you do a training one day and then, you know, we solve all the problems or we've checked the box and we're done. But often companies or organizations will come at a time of crisis. So something has happened or there's been a history of, you know, negative behaviors. A lot of what I see come up in workplaces, you know, are policy issues that become people issues. So because there's no clear pathways for how to advance, then people can start to feel like, well, is it because of my identity? But sometimes it's also we're holding on to folks who maybe need some additional support in, you know, not saying the off-color things. But then sometimes these things rise to the level of, you know, a potential discrimination issue and workplaces needing to address that as well. And so a lot of the work I've done is starting with just doing an assessment. So, you know, interviewing people at various levels in the organization. I've used survey tools and things like that to just get a sense of how healthy the climate is, how safe people feel, you know, across gender and race and all of these things. But then being able to disaggregate the data to see, like, are there particular groups that are struggling more than others? And, you know, there are some folks I would say, you know, I can hit you in your head. So meaning you show you the data, give you the facts. I can hit you in your heart, you know, bring the voices of people who have had those experiences. And when I say hit, I don't mean like, I mean, figurative hit.
Yes.
Or we can think about, you know, the financial costs, which we know when things do rise to the level of a lawsuit. Now we're talking about all kinds of other problems from the goodwill of a company. Mm-hmm. It's one exercise I would do with companies where I have a continuum from like Ben and Jerry's on one end to Papa John's on the other. And if you know much about Ben and Jerry's, their history, they're known for being very progressive, mm-hmm. very, you know, Black Lives Matter.
Right.
And we know Papa John's CEO had to step down because of using racial slurs. So those are the two ends of the continuum. Where do you want your organization to fall?
Right.
Where are you now and where do you want to be? And so much of it starts from leadership. And so I would do a lot of work with C-suite folks, upper management, middle management as well, and thinking about, you know, what tone are we setting in the workplace as leaders and how can we, you know, use our privilege, our opportunity to help other people advance?
You talk about leadership and I can't help but think of the country's leadership right now. DEI has become weaponized. The three letters is as if you're saying something bad. What are some of the things that you are seeing since this change seem to be taking place?
Yeah, so it's funny because a lot of us foresaw this on the horizon. For those of us who study African-American history, we know that for every, you know, step forward or for every, you know, moment of triumph and victory, there has always been a period of backlash and retrenchment.
Right.
And so this is nothing new. We saw it after the end of the Civil War and Reconstruction. We saw it after the Civil Rights Movement. And we're still living in that kind of post-racial yeah. society
yeah.
that, you know, folks were talking about after Barack Obama's presidency. Mm-hmm. But in any event, I think, one, a lot of it is just revealing what we already knew for some organizations and some individuals. And when I say that, I think a lot of people felt like the gestures around DEI from many organizations were very performative. And so I think this moment was a test, you know, do you stand by it? And we've seen many organizations stand, as the kids would say, 10 toes down
right.
around DEI. And it's really encouraging to know that it's not gone and, you know, the real ones are still pushing forward.
They just don't call it DEI.
Now, it's funny because I mentioned I was previously the Chief Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Officer for the city, and I actually started in that role, I think, a month before 47 was reelected. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just a few months in, January 2024, we see all these executive orders in cities around the country. You saw different leaders respond differently. Some folks were like, you know, let's you know, figure out how we can rebrand or let's just get rid of it altogether.
I mean, money was attached to this.
Money. There are lots of fears around the freezing of federal funding. And so these were, you know, very real issues that, you know, were being that had to be contended with. Cities around the country, including Philadelphia, you know, went to court and, you know, fought and stood up and said, you know, you can't freeze our funding. And so I think And they prevailed on many fronts. But I think, you know, for a lot of organizations from law firms to universities, we saw, you know, people comply in advance and others that, you know, said, we're going to stay the course. I think a big piece of this is data. One of the challenges around the Students for Fair Admissions case, which was the Supreme Court case that struck down affirmative action and has been a lot of what companies and organizations have been responding to, like, oh, no more affirmative action. This is illegal. You know, in fact, these policies that are put in place to stop discrimination are actually discriminatory, or so the logic goes. We know that when we can show here are the reasons why we're doing it, we're not just, you know, picking people just because they are Black or they are a woman. We have actual standards and metrics, and, you know, we're responding to historical inequities. And the more we can support the work we do, the less people can attack it and say that we're just being arbitrary or we're just being discriminatory.
Okay.
So that's been a big piece of it. I've been seeing a lot of organizations really double down in terms of, you know, tracking and, you know, justifying why, you know, the why behind what they're doing. And I think that's where a lot of the work is going. Now, aside from all that, for me, it was about making sure that this is embedded in everything that we do. In such a way that no matter who's in charge, this can't just be wiped away with an administration. And when we think about the principles of DEI, we're talking about fairness, access, things that are broader than, you know, affirmative action even or race specific. A lot of this stuff is thinking about, you know, just how do we make decisions in a way that is data driven as opposed to bias driven. And so the more organizations thought critically and continue to think critically about the way they do things and are able to map it out in such a way, I think it really does provide a lot of protection from the attacks. I remember there were like lists of words that AI was searching for in that grant. So
yeah,
I think that there is still a lot of space for DEI. I still see a lot of diversity roles out there. So it's not dead.
Bridging Philly continues in a moment.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Back to Bridging Philly. Connecting our communities on the issues that matter to you.
Of course, we want to get into the Teach Me Anti-Racism Allyship series, which I said before is genius because this is specifically about teaching children. Parents could teach the children. Teachers could teach children. Children can, you know, delve in on their own. Talk about the program, how it works. I know there are videos. I've watched several of the videos. They are so engaging and bright and just makes the conversation easier to have. So if you could just kind of describe the program and how it works and talk about those videos.
Absolutely. So the program is in a 26 episode or 26 lesson cinematic experience. So we use a combination of animated lessons, and all of these are very short, just a couple minutes long, followed by a music video. And then the program also includes discussion guides and activities and all kinds of resources for parents and teachers to have conversations with students around concepts from allyship to cisgender to equality. So a lot of the topics are giving, you know, just straight vocabulary for folks to understand, you know, what does it mean to misgender someone and how can we avoid, you know, that kind of thing, but also broader topics like or concepts like, you know, judgment-free zone or welcoming spaces.
Right.
So a lot of the idea is to, one, teach children ideas around justice and belonging, allyship, so they can be, you know, better to each other or to other children, but also for the young kids who may or may not be queer or trans or, you know, what have you themselves, to see themselves reflected, but also, you know, not grow up feeling like it's wrong to be who they are and being able to accept and love themselves. I know for a lot of kids, myself included, you know, I identify as bisexual, but it was something that, you know, it took me until I was an adult to be able to have the space and the language to understand myself and not feel ashamed. And, you know, if I could, if I could see a world where kids didn't have to wait till they're 25 to come out and or grow up, you know, having all this internalized shame and fear, you know, that is a huge win for me. And so that's why I wanted to make, you know, take these poems and turn them into something that were accessible for kids, but then also provide the support for the adults. So you know, we watch this video and then let's have a conversation about it. And, it, you know, you don't have to be perfect. You don't have to have a PhD in gender studies to, you know, teach kids that it's not okay to mock someone because of who they are.
Right.
You know, it's okay to like more than one gender. It's okay to dress in different ways. You know, there's not one way of being a boy or girl. And even the idea of gender, so much of it is made up, you know, who gets to do what. And a lot of us as kids, we learn boys wear blue, girls wear pink.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so we grow up in boxes. But so this is really about, you know, growing up the next generation of kids who, you know, question these boxes and really push back. To make more freedom for everybody.
You know, I would imagine that some people would say, kids aren't ready for this. Kids can't handle this. Kids are actually teaching adults about of this, honestly. And, you know, I wanted to be clear, you have 26 episodes. Each episode represents a letter of the alphabet. Yes. That's why they're 26. Yes. So A for allyship, all the way to you being understanding.
Yes. And we actually go to Z. So Z's here, they're neo pronouns, just to get a little more.
That's right, Z.
So you basically created something that you wish you had when you were younger.
Absolutely. And it's funny when people say, oh, kids are too young to notice or to understand. And I remember being a kid, I was watching Bugs Bunny and drag. I mean, even Tweety Bird. Did you know Tweety Bird is a boy?
No.
Exactly.
Like, I did not know.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot there.
Right.
And
right.
When you don't talk to kids or give kids the space to, you know, have questions and explore and, you know, see whose story is there, whose stories are missing, you know, it gets filled somehow, whether it's pop culture or by, you know, their friends, the internet, misinformation. So one question is like, who do you want educating your kids on these things?
Right.
Because, you know, your silence, you know, just like with race, when I would do trainings with parents and, you know, teachers, a lot of times I'd be like, oh, you know, aren't kids a little young to be talking about this? No. Just like with race, kids notice, with gender, all these things, like kids are on it.
They are. I'm learning through my daughters. They are definitely on it. Some of the things that they have taught me, I'm like, really? I didn't understand that. I didn't know that. So no, the kids are definitely ready for this. And what I love about the video series are the different characters. They're just so bright and friendly. And I think all kids can see themselves in all of the characters. We're talking about, and I want you to describe all of them. Riley uses a pronoun he, them. Then we have Amira. She wears a hijab. Then there's Jordan, Alex, Maya. Give me a handful of those characters and describe them for me. And tell me how you came up with their different identities and their different backgrounds.
Absolutely. So if you look at the logo for the Anti-Racism Academy, it's five children. They all represent different races. So, you know, to the extent that we, you know, agree that there are quote unquote five races. So it's always important for me to build something that was multicultural. You know, when I was a teacher, I taught an African-centered school here in Philly. I taught at Sankofa Freedom Academy Charter School. So I'm very like blackety black, but I thought it was important to not only, you know, show the diversity of children and make sure that, you know, Black children are well represented as well, but also, you know, show other races of students or kids so that they can be represented as well, especially when it comes to queer identities. You know, this is across racial lines, queer people, trans people suffer from so much oppression, for lack of better words, whether we're talking about, you know, in Christianity, Islam, United States, the Caribbean. And so it's like, this is we're equal opportunity, you know, allies across the board. And so, you know, with Riley, so Riley's character is a trans boy. And so it was important for me to, one, highlight the a story of a trans boy, especially because I don't think that story is as highlighted within the trans experience, or at least in media, I should say. But also, you know, have this character serve as an anchor, not a tragic, you know, story as we see in so many instances, but a beacon of light and someone who's showing the way for how to be an ally. And so with Riley, Amira, it's important for me to have a Muslim character. My mom was Muslim as when I was growing up. So just recognizing a whole another culture that has historically been thought of as being, you know, very exclusionary to LGBT folks, but to be able to show like, no, like there are progressive folks, you know, across the board. You know, who else? We have Sam. Sam is Red Hat. So I guess we would consider Sam our token white boy character. But, you know, again, it was important. And, you know, and Sam sings a country song at some point. And
Sam matters.
Sam has a crush on Jordan, but that's kind of like subtext. You know, cues for questioning. But again, it was important to be able to show white children as well. Sure. But being in community. So I used to write a piece for PBS Teachers Lounge, and one of them was called Who is the Main Character? And I did research, you know, looking at just representation of Black and brown children in general in children's books. And the numbers are still abysmal. I mean, at this point, you're still, I think I read somewhere, like 5 times more likely to see a rabbit than an Asian kid or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like even as background characters, we know that a lot of kids' content just doesn't, you know, is very monolithic. And so a part of it was just showing the diversity of children, not just as sidekicks, not just as background characters as we normally see students. We have, who else? We have Dev. Dev is South Asian. Dev's gay. Dev is very confident and is, you know, the bookworm of the group and is teaching the other kids about the Kinsey scale and how, you know, there's a continuum of sexuality. So we wanted to make sure we had different characters that funny, informative, and make it, you know, come to life so the kids could see themselves across. So we have 10 of them.
Is Sam the one that likes, I'm Sam, I'm a boy, and I love making cupcakes with my grandma. Like he's like, I'm a boy and I like to bake and it's okay.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. We have Jay who's gender fluid. You know, some days, you know, they feel more like a girl. Some days they feel more like a boy. And it's so important because I think kids, especially when they're young, They're going to explore. They may want to, you know, try something different one day, and just being able to hold space for kids to pick what they want to wear. Like, you know, we're not talking about, you know, anything crazy here, but just allowing self-expression and not shaming them. You know, I remember being a kid and I was a tomboy. I got the question, you know, are you a boy or girl? Because my mom put my hair in straight backs and I was just, you know, a rough and tumble, you know, kind of girl. And I'm so thankful that I had the space to be that for as long as I felt comfortable being in that space. And, you know, my mom let me do it.
Right.
And then when I wanted to get girly and start wearing, you know, dresses and makeup and all that, I was able to do that too. And so that's, you know, a big message, or one of the big messages from the program is like, it's okay to be you and it's okay to figure it out. The target audience, our elementary school students, so thinking like, you know, 8 to 13 range, you know, puberty range, when you're starting to, you know, change, your body's changing, you're starting to maybe feel attraction, get crushes, things like that.
Right.
And this is the, I think, you know, a good time to disrupt if they already are receiving the negative messages. But also, you know, for those who are just, you know, learning and coming into these conversations, to be able to start from a place of positivity, from a place of support, as opposed to having to unlearn a bunch of nasty stuff down the line.
Who is it that you want to use these series, the series? If parents of any background, they can go to YouTube and they can check this out. Who are you looking at to actually put this on the TV and say, hey, sit down, let's check this out?
Absolutely. Thank you for the question. So we know that right now in this day and age with schools and how so much, you know, education around that's related to DEI and, you know, all these boogie word terms. I also teach critical race theory.
Oh, boy.
Anyways, I said it to say that I know it can be hard for kids to get this kind of stuff in schools. So one target audience is parents who still want their kids to have access to progressive forms of education. So, you know, my mom always say, you can learn the words of those rap songs. You can learn. Well, if you can let your kid watch Disney Plus and all the things, and you can take some time to, you know, and it's very short too. You know, each episode is about 5 minutes long. And so I know a lot of parents, they want to do the right thing. They want to have these conversations, but they just don't know where to start.
Right.
And I want to give them a starting point and let them know that one, here are some resources for you as a parent. So Each of the episodes comes along with a parent guide as well as an educator guide that gives some, you know, high level background information, some tips along the way, some best practices, some things that maybe to look out for to make sure that, you know, we are mindful and can model to our kids that, you know, we have the humility to grow with you. We don't have all the answers and that's okay. The other audience is teachers. And so we have lesson plans and unit plans, you know, at its heart. So I was an English teacher. So we're teaching vocabulary. You know, we can align this to the Common Core standards, everybody. So, you know, we're checking multiple boxes with this.
What advice would you have for parents who want to raise socially conscious and inclusive children?
So the advice I would give is to show up. And what I mean by show up is that it's not going to happen by osmosis. Mm. So we have to be intentional about, you know, what our kids are consuming. And it doesn't mean, you know, we can't still show them the old cartoons and that kind of thing, but to be able to have those conversations with them. Hey, what did you notice? What did you see? Let's talk about it. Were people being treated fairly? Being able to, you know, broach these conversations and being able to have it in a child appropriate way over time and as they age, I think goes a long way as opposed to, you know, the alternative, which would be not saying anything at all. Right. So I think that's a lot of the default. Other pieces, educate yourself. So for me, as much as I think that everybody has the capacity to, you know, grow in their anti-racist practice and their practices allies, you know, a lot of the reason why I focus on children, not only because, you know, I love kids and I was a teacher, but it's a way to, you know, do inception on the parents. So get them to learn because they're invested before they're kids. Right. And so the more you invest, and it doesn't have to be a PhD worth of, you know, research and all of that. It can just be as simple as taking time to watch a 5-minute video, have a 5-minute conversation and revisit. The other piece is when you see something, say something. And I mean that in the context of your kid. So if you notice that your kid may be, you know, having questions or maybe gay or, you know, maybe has internalized some homophobic rhetoric or any of these things, like use these as opportunities to have conversations with your kids, whether it's, you know, hey, in this house, we don't use language like that. We're respectful.
I'm glad you said in this house.
Because it starts home.
Because it's out there. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It was definitely out there. And, you know, and creating the space for kids to come and say, oh, I heard this. What does this mean?
Right.
And
right.
being able to have that conversation as opposed to say, oh, that's where, you know, a lot of fear and shame begins. Yes. So I think there's a lot of opportunity and a lot of resources out there, including Teach Me Anti-Racism Allyship.
Well, like I said, I think this is genius. I think this is a great teaching tool. What's your ultimate hope for this? This is fairly new. Where do you see this going down the line?
So Teach Me Anti-Racism Allyship is actually a part of a larger series of a similar, I guess, make as far as the A through Z structure. So we also have Democracy and Diversity already out. I'm about to publish 6 more.
Oh my God.
So everything from neurodiversity to environmental justice. And my vision would be to, you know, essentially be the Scholastic of anti-racism, be the, you know, I'm gonna speak it like a channel, a kid's channel, like a Disney Plus, but for this kind of content so kids can hear the music and, you know, watch these characters and see themselves, but be able to learn. I call it, this one the Gay Schoolhouse Rock. So many of us, you know, we grew up with it, we learn it, and it sticks
and
with you.
Everything is still in my head.
For the rest of your life. So that's what I want to see.
Yes. Okay. I love that. So where can people go to check this out and maybe learn a little bit more about the series?
Absolutely. So you can find us at teachmeallyship.com. That'll bring you to our homepage. We can learn more about me. We also have the Anti-Racism Academy YouTube channel, which is where I started, as well as the Teach Me Anti-Racism YouTube channel, which is our kids' channel where you can find a lot of these videos for free. We're on Instagram, Teach Me Anti-Racism, the Anti-Racism Academy. Yeah, give us a follow, subscribe, like, share, all the things.
All the things. All right, sounds good. Brandi Blocker Anderson, founder and CEO of the Anti-Racism Academy and creator of Teach Me Anti-Racism Allyship Series. Thank you so much for sharing your gifts and sharing your creations. This is wonderful. It's a wonderful teaching tool, and much success to you.
Thank you so much.
Bridging Philly continues in a moment.
The GLP-1 pill you've been waiting for is now on Row. Yep, it's finally here. With the same clinically proven ingredient, now in a pill, and now on Row. It's the first FDA-approved GLP-1 pill for weight loss. At the lowest price available, that's one daily GLP-1 pill for big results. Now on Row. Go to row.co/listen to see if you qualify. RX only. Go to row.co/safety for serious side effects and boxed warning associated with GLP-1s.
Back to Bridging Philly from KYW News Radio 103.9 FM.
Welcome back to Bridging Philly. Fresh off of his performance at the One Philly Unity concert on July 4th, Philly's own rapper Philadelphia Freeway gave Charity Howard the scoop on Free Fest. That's his free community festival that's coming up this summer. Let's find out more on this latest Shara in the City.
All right, so this week on Shara in the City, we are out in the Navy Yard. There's a festival coming up, and we're going to get a little sneak peek today. Hey, what's up, buddy?
How you doing? Hey, it's your boy, Philadelphia Freeway. It's a blessing to be here, and it's also a blessing to be sharing this beautiful city. He is I, and I am him. Slim with the tilted brim.
I love it. So you have something coming up. I mean, like, it's a free festival. How apropos?
Oh, most definitely. So we have Free Fest. And the beautiful thing about Free Fest is we're standing right here at the main parade ground at the Philadelphia Navy Yard. This is our third annual Free Fest, and I'm so excited. We're so happy and blessed to be in partnership with Council President Kenyatta Johnson. And listen, it's growing, man. We have some exciting things going on for this year, so I'm excited.
All right, so let's talk about it. Drop some knowledge.
Well, what's new is we have the Free Fest Community Ambassador Program. We're mobilizing 80 to 95 community members, you know, so they can support the event. We're going to have dedicated steak tents, so we have a place with shade for people to come hang out. It's going to be a beautiful time. Besides that, we have a 250 blood pressure cuff initiative. We're giving away 250 blood pressure cuffs in honor of the 250 years of America and 250 years of Philadelphia. And, you know, my health journey. So we're just trying to put our best foot forward in the community.
And you're also a part of Gift of Life.
Speaking on Gift of Life, you know, I sit on the community advisory board with Gift of Life, and I'm so blessed to have that relationship with them. You know, I sit in the unique space of being the kidney transplant recipient and a donor dad. I've been on both sides. I was the one waiting for a life-sustaining kidney transplant, and then when my son tragically passed away in 2020, he was an organ donor, and he saved four lives. Two people got his kidneys, one person got his lung, and one person got his liver. And I was actually in the hospital with my son when they told us that he was no longer going to make it. And someone from Gift of Life approached me with one of the hardest questions a human being can ask another human being. And, like, you know, my heart is really with them because they're superheroes. They do a lot of amazing work. Like, to have to come to a family and ask them could their loved one be a hero is a difficult job. Trust me, I've been there and I've seen it. Jahadney saved four lives through his gifts.
What a legacy. But you carry on not only legacies for your family but also for the community. You do so much. I mean, like, you don't stop. You put the engine on and you go.
It's really therapy for me. We just did a partnership with Mastery Charter Picket Campus, which was the school that my daughter Harmony graduated from. As y'all know, my daughter Harmony passed away from cancer in 2021. And it was a blessing to be able to bring the phlebotomy program to that school and to the school district of Philadelphia. And it was a major success. All the students completed the program. Every Tuesday I do a live. It's called Feeling Healthier Freeway, Road to a Healthier You, where me and a bunch of people from the community come together. We talk about whatever we're dealing with. If it's a loss of a loved one, if it's a health issue, if it's a mental health issue, if you're just having a bad day, if you're having a good day, if you want to come talk, if you want to listen, we there for it. And it's really been helping a lot of people and helping the community. And I'm blessed to be able to provide that platform. Like, you know, originally we had the first Free Fest September of 2015. I was diagnosed with end-stage renal failure September 15th of 2015. And then Free Fest was supposed to be that Saturday. But I had to go to the hospital. They gave me dialysis. I had so much toxins and fluids and stuff build up into my system. Once I got my first treatment of dialysis, I'm like, I'm going to do the show. Like, I feel good. They like, if you don't sit your butt down, you're going to be here for at least a week. So shout out to Raekwon from Wu-Tang Clan. He did the first Free Fest for me. And, you know, as soon as I was able to get back on my feet, we brought Free Fest all the way back around. And the beautiful thing about that is, in between me being diagnosed with kidney failure and Free Fest, I founded Freedom Thinkers Academy, which is music, health, education, and culture. And we're blessed to be doing so much amazing work in the community, from education to health, you know, and music. And with the digital media students, all the alumni, we're working on an album together. So we're going to perform some of the music from the album at Free Fest, and it's going to be an amazing time.
You have so much going on. So what's up with you lately? And you just came off the big concert on the Parkway. I mean, Parkway
couple
Freeway.
A couple big concerts. I like that. I got to throw that in my repertoire. Parkway Freeway? Oh, that's a new one. Parkway Freeway? Well, I ain't think of that. Shout out to Mayor Parker. We just had an amazing, amazing concert, 4th of July, the Philadelphia Unity concert. You know, the rain tried to stop it, but we still came back out and we shine, I tell you. And, you know, since I was, I think I met Will Smith one time before when I was a little kid. Quick story for you. I won a Pregnancy Is Not For Me contest when I went to Sarah Middle School, and I met Stanley T. And he embraced me, and he helped me. He was trying to help me get signed back then. Thank God I didn't, because he wanted my rap name to be Mr. Peabody, and that would have ruined my career. My present day career. But I love him for the experience and the education that I got through that. That helped season me as the artist that I am today. And, you know, I got a chance to meet Will Smith back then, because he would take me to a lot of the concerts. But Grown Freeway, never got a chance to meet Will Smith. So it was a blessing to meet Will Smith. Jazzy Jeff, that's my brother. We kick it all the time. But it was definitely a blessing to meet Will Smith and share the stage with him. Not only me, but my State Property brothers. Meek Mill was up there. Jill Scott. It was so Philly. It was Tierra Whack. And shout out to her. She got an amazing album that just came out, you know. So I feel like Philly, we coming together.
You look across the stage, you see all of Philly. Mm-hmm. What was your favorite part? What was the moment where you went like, ooh, the kid inside you jumped out, other than Will Smith?
I mean, just the whole experience, you know, just seeing, like, you know, seeing my brother Petey, seeing the Young Guns, seeing Beans and myself be on a major platform in the city of Philadelphia. Like, I used to take the bus and ride past the art museum. You know, I lived on 41st and Parkside, so me and my dad used to jog around Kelly Drive, and I used to ride my bike up and down Kelly Drive. So my dream was to be an artist, and to be able to perform at that level in front of my city is a blessing.
Ooh, and look at you now.
Most definitely.
And that was such a showcasing of the talent that is born from Philly. You're part of that crew.
It's a blessing, you know. And I plan on dropping a new project around the same time as Free Fest. So keep your eyes and your ears open. We got some amazing things going on.
Can you give us a little something? Or even just a sneak peek?
Well,
with our ears.
I'm going to give you an exclusive that we didn't share with any other media platform. This is the 23rd year of Philadelphia Freeway. It's my 23rd anniversary. So we're going to do a whole Philadelphia Freeway set at Free Fest.
That's
in honor
what I
the 23rd anniversary of Philadelphia Freeway. So
congratulations.
The festival is August 1st at the Philadelphia Navy Yard, starting at 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. At 4 p.m., that's when the performances start. So get ready, man. It's going to be an amazing time. Like, Free Fest is going to be amazing. It's going to be one for the history books. Get ready for it. It's going to be electrifying. Let's go. Free Fest on the way.
Thank you for joining us. Bridging Philly is brought to you by Gift of Life Donor Program. Register as an organ donor at donorsone.org. For more information on Bridging Philly, follow KYW News Radio on social media. And if you have any ideas for interesting features that you'd like to share, feel free to get in touch with us at bridgingphilly@kywnewsradio.com. For Sharaday Howard and our producer Sabrina Boyd-Circa, I'm Raquel Williams. Be well.